X-15 Divine Cybernetics Number 1A
Now, today I would like to introduce the subject of divine cybernetics as we see today, at the present moment, in the Christian Science textbook. Now, the moment one touches the word cybernetics, people may come along and say, I have looked up my dictionary and I don't find that word in the dictionary. What is this word? Well, if they look it up in their dictionary, it means that they have an old dictionary which is at least 20 years old, because the term cybernetics has been coined around about 1948 by Herbert Gierner, a professor here in Boston. Quite interestingly, that it was a Bostonite, a Bostoner or Bostonite?
Bostonite.
A Bostonian. I knew that something was wrong. And so, before that time, even Webster would not have this word. Now, this is very significant because today, after 20 years, you have thousands of books on cybernetics and tens of thousands of scientific articles on cybernetics. We even have whole big, thick dictionaries only on cybernetic terms. So you can see what really happened with us in this world during the last 20 years, namely that we were living in an age of a tremendous knowledge expansion, where the investigation into every field of science has grown so terrifically that it becomes quite a problem really to be up to date with everything. You know, Wernher von Braun has made or issues now a series of books on the various fields of science and on investigating the growth of knowledge. He has put out a statistic which runs around about this, that the knowledge explosion that has taken place is something like that. He says, if we take the year 1800, then it took about 100 years until 1900 to double the knowledge in the fields of science. From 1900 to 1950, it only took 50 years to double it again. And from 1950, it took only another 10 years, to 1960, to double that again. And from 1960, it only took 6 years, until 1966, to double that knowledge again. Which shows that, say, if we take the time of where Mrs. Eddy went to school, that knowledge in the world has now been multiplied by 30 times up to now. So we can see that we live in a period where we have to be awake, that we go with the time and not against the time, and that we are living in a quite interesting period where we have to see that we really don't try to be too much religionists. I say that because of this. Historically, it was the churches that were the seat of knowledge. It was the churches that established universities, did run the universities, did appoint professors, at that time called confessors, of the universities. And then we witness that which has taken place in the 17th, 18th, 19th century, that the universities struggled and had to struggle against the church, to become independent and to be free thinkers and to go ahead with their investigation. It was the church that tried to hold science back in every way possible. And so today we have to be aware that the religious sense within ourselves is not going to hold back the scientific development. You know what happened from history? You know that very well. That which the sciences have really seen and discovered, if that did not agree with the church concept of the universe, then that was called erroneous and expelled from the church, expelled from the universities. And so it is always the religious sense that is hindering within us, in each one of us, the scientific development and broadening out of knowledge. Now, Mrs. Eddy, in her textbook, starting with that chapter theology, that subchapter theology, she puts that very question and says there, must Christian science come through the Christian churches? And she doesn't answer it with yes. And when she doesn't answer it, not answer it with yes, she means no. In other words, she goes on and says, well, Christian science has come, but the churches don't see it, don't acknowledge it, don't recognize it. Well, what does she mean that she says that Christian science has come and the Christian church, naturally the mother church is a Christian church, doesn't recognize it? She meant that the Christ idea is much bigger than it can be held and contained and limited within the structure of a denomination. That Christian science has come outside of the churches, the Christian churches, namely in science. That the world is Christian science. You see, going back again historically, the Catholic Church said everything that the scientists find out which does not agree with our theological concept of the universe is error and is expelled. What they did, they made a real break. They broke the universe into parts until finally they said, well, we are only concerned with the theological, and you can look after the world as matter and physics. You can do with that what you want. That doesn't concern us as long as we keep to ourselves the theological realm. Well, that is splitting the world into two. It is not a universe, but it is a diverse that they made. And so the same thing we have to watch within ourselves. We are only too apt to say to every science which is not termed Christian science, we say, well, that's error. We say to physics, well, that's error. We say to biology, well, that's error. Everything is error. Where is something of the truth left by that time? The Christian scientist is apt to make out of the universe a diverse. And this naturally is not right, because Mrs. Eddy's discovery is that there is one being, and that therefore everything which goes on, if it's called the spiritual universe, if it's called the mental universe, if it's called the psychological universe, if it's called the material universe, if it's called the biological universe, everything that's going on must have its interpretation within the one whole, or it is excluded and we have a diverse. We should not go that way that we say to everything that these wonderful scientists and universities bring out, well, that's error. We should see that there is one principle working, but we must recognize how that principle is working. But if we recognize that, then we always go out from that one principle and therefore have one universe. And so we don't live constantly in a foreign universe, in a universe of struggle and antagonism and opposites and dualism and I don't know what. We live in an integrated universe the moment we begin to realize that there is one principle. And this one principle comes not through that narrow channel of a religion or of a denomination of one religion, but that the Christ idea is so unlimited that it comes through every channel, whatever that channel is. The question is only, can we interpret the phenomena rightly? But it's always the one principle that is at work. So, in a way, we must see that, therefore, we have to take in the world, and see that the world is not outside the one being, but that it is within the one being. But we just have to interpret it rightly and properly. Actually, you see, because the Christian Science movement has not done this, because the Christian Science movement has said, we alone have the truth. And if it is not stated in the phraseology of the Christian Science terminology, then it is error. Then it is evil. All that's error. All that's material. And what we have done is that we have put out the thinkers that the world does no more take notice of Christian Science, that the world has alienated itself from Christian Science. This was not so at Mrs. Eddy's time. She attracted the thinkers from all over the place, be it from the field of literature or art or philosophy or whatever it was. But today it's no more so, because we have remained and bound us back to a terminology which was right and progressive 100 years ago. But as I have said right at the beginning, with that explosion of knowledge, there also naturally has been an explosion of terminology, as I have said with cybernetics, and therefore no one can make an intelligent human being believe that if Jesus were here today, that he would talk in the language of the Bible. No one can make me that believe. That if Jesus would be introduced into the university by John the Baptist, that John the Baptist would introduce Jesus to the students at the university and say, look here, the Lamb of God. They would just roar with laughter. Well, I can't see that Jesus, who was a pioneer in the spiritual and mental realm, that he would teach his principle today in the language and in the symbolism of 2,000 years ago. Just nobody can make me that believe anymore. And the same thing is true with Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy has seen the principle and rule of Jesus' teaching and presented the science of Jesus' teaching and healing, and she presented it in the language of her day and with the symbolism of her day. But nobody can make me believe that a Mrs. Eddy, who was so up to date in her time and so interested in everything, that she just would have closed her eyes in 1910 and not have taken notice of anything that's going on in the world, not have taken notice of what's going on with Einstein and Planck and Heisenberg, not have taken note of what's going on in the biological field with Jardin and so on, with Dunuy, that she just would have written that textbook today again the way she did it then. Nobody can make me believe that. And that was not her purpose. Her purpose was that she says exactly what she means in the textbook, that she says divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form, to the age in which we live and which is adapted to the age in which we live. Now, nobody of us is living 100 years ago, or he is really a... Yeah. Well, we live in a different world. Completely different. It's even so different, even compared with 20 years ago. Who would have thought 10 years ago, even here in America, that you would land on the moon this year? Even 10 years ago when the Sputnik went up, or before the Sputnik went up. And it's only 10 years ago, 11 years ago. The world changes, and it's such in such a rapidity, and the knowledge becomes so, gathers such a momentum and such intensity at the present moment, that we have to go with it. We have to be with it, they say. Do you say that so in America?
Yeah.
And they do so in England. We have to be with it.
Yeah.
Well, let's be with it and see what's going on and try to see this this principle which Mrs. Eddy discovered and which was revealed to her, which still is the same principle, that we can translate that principle into the language and into the symbolism of today and not of yesterday. Why should we always be antediluvians? I don't see why. Living in a world and talking in the world of yesterday. So, I think if we want really to make the world see what we see as the divine principle, we have that Christ mind, which is free enough and unlimited enough to translate the understanding of that chart and of the principle of being into the language of today. Now, I come to back to cybernetics. You see, when the atom bomb exploded about 25 years ago, the world thought that now comes a new age, and it said it is the atomic age that has broken up in on humanity. And we believed that it was the atomic age that would really mold and fashion the new way of life and the new structure of consciousness. But it isn't so. More and more today, people are seeing that that atomic age is already over, and it didn't last very long. That really, that which is foremost is, and that which will transform the world much more than the atomic power, is cybernetic. Now, cybernetic has been seen for the first time in 1948 by Herbert Wiener, a professor here at the MIT, and from that point on it just exploded in an enormous way. It exploded, and among them is the computer. Just to take one example of cybernetics, is the computer. Now look here at the situation. Most of the Western world, perhaps nearly a billion people, have watched the television when they went up to the moon and looked at that, and just were flabbergasted and impressed by it, said, going to the moon. They could see that this is what would have not been possible without a computer, that this is, was really the key point which enabled the rockets to go there. The computer. And everybody was talking about the computer, but nobody knew what cybernetics is. But the computer is just one mathematical, technical, mechanical application of cybernetics. Now, can you see what that means? That we have a world that is run by something which the majority of the world doesn't know. That's dangerous. Did I make myself clear? That the world today is run by computers, say, as one example, and the world doesn't know what is cybernetics, which is at the root of a computer. This brings what the thinkers see, a very dangerous situation to mankind, if mankind does not wake up. Namely, that there will be a few people who know how to run the technical world, and the others don't, and therefore become a new sort of slaves. In early time, they became slaves of muscular force. Today, they become easily be a slave of ignorance, because they don't know what's going on. Take away a computer today from America, and America stands still. It's finished. 10-20 years ago, there was no computer. A computer is only one technical application of cybernetics, and nobody knows what cybernetics is. Therefore, the whole world trusts itself to something which they don't know. That's dangerous. That's very dangerous. So, I think we have somehow to realize what this cybernetic is, and naturally, everything that appears on the human plane is a counterfeit of a divine idea, that we know. It's always a counterfeit of a divine idea. Therefore, behind cybernetics must be the divine idea of cybernetics, namely divine cybernetics. And as Christian Science, we better wake up and see what this divine cybernetics is. And I will try to show you what it means. But let's just be clear. We are entering a completely new era, age, the cybernetic age, not the atomic age. The atomic age is just an extrapolation of an increase of force that has gone on over the last few centuries. Just making use of more force and force and force. But the cybernetics make use of more and more intelligence. That's why it is quite different. You see? What that intelligence is will be most interesting for us to consider today. But let us just see. You see, I want to introduce that thought step by step. Let us just see that there are always new mutations going on. That the old age, an old period, has its time and passes away, and suddenly something completely new precipitates itself upon mankind, and mankind has to be awake to it and take up the challenge and meet the challenge from it. Think how these new mutations have come about over and over. Now, every era and every field has its own laws. Take, for instance, up to Einstein, before Einstein. Everything was based in physics on the law of causality. Newton's law was the overall, predominant law. Everything that was based, the whole natural science was based on the investigation and the knowledge of that which is ruling the macrocosm, namely the law of cause and effect, causality. But when they began to investigate the microcosm, the atom and the parts of the atoms, they began to see that there, in that field of matter, quite different laws rule. The laws of spontaneity, the laws of probability, that completely new laws rule in the very same realm of matter, but considered from a different standpoint. So, if we have matter and consider it as a macrocosm, we have definite rules, rules of causality, but the moment we consider that very same thing from the standpoint of the microcosm, we have different laws ruling there. The laws of spontaneity, probability, and so on. Today, they begin to see that there is not only a microcosm and a macrocosm, that there is even a bigger cosm. They call it the megacosm, the very big cosm, and they see that there again different laws rule. They speak of the anti-world, of antimatter. They have seen that there is always the opposite of what they have found as matter. Instead of a positive electron, a negative electron, everything has its counterpart in a world which we had not known up to now. But today they already find out that there, where we believe that there is just one world, that there is at that very same place an anti-world with anti-gravitation, with antimatter, with anti-electrons, and so on. Well, I take this as just an example or an illustration to show what is very important for us to see today, that something is not just something as we believed since the Greek philosophers up to 20 years ago, that something is always that something, but that something can be something and the opposite of it. You take Planck, 1925, he discovered that, say, matter can be either considered, or the light can either be considered as a wave or as particles, as quantums. Well, that was completely impossible, that two opposite things like a wavelength and a quantum can be the very same thing. But matter can be looked at either as a wavelength or as energy, or it can be looked at as a quantum, as mass. And one doesn't exclude the other. You see, what happened is that really for the first time in human investigation, in the line of scientific thought, for the first time the dualism was being to be resolved. That dualism which says something is this and therefore it can't be something else. That was the Greek philosopher that stated that, and that held true up to about 1925, and then it broke down. Then they found, no, something can be something, and at the same time it can be something very different. Can you see that? Now I take this not as Christian Science, I take it as symbolism. Jesus was talking in symbolism of the bastard seed and of sheep and goats and so on. We speak now of the symbolism of today in order to explain something. Now, from that time on, something terrific has happened, which I won't try to show until this evening. Namely, the dualism finds for the first time a solution in oneness. Here, there was an indication in physics that something can be one thing and the very opposite too. And that doesn't exclude each other, and that it isn't illogical. It's scientific. Now, In the same way, I tried to show that there are that I don't speak fluently sometimes, but you see that in each level, or from each standpoint, or from each aspect, different laws rule. If I look at matter from the standpoint of microcosm, a certain law rules, law of spontaneity. But that does not exclude the law of causality. It only says, if you look at it from another standpoint, you have the law of causality. And if apparently in that underworld, in the megacosm, we look at it, we find again different laws which are completely different, but at the same place and at the same time.